This week on The Inside Flap.
There are thrillers that don't need twists. I mean, Jaws doesn't have a twist. It just has a shark that's killing people. And they have to stop it. There's no, you know, it doesn't turn out at the end that the mayor was the shark all along.
Thing is a poetry quoter, yeah.
And you know that him and Trudy Styler, his wife, quote poetry back and forth.
No, they do.
Oh, yeah, with a bunch of candles around.
Yeah. Yep.
Candles, their Kama Sutra book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. And he'll sidle up to you at a party and just start spouting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Run away from Sting.
The worst. Run. Don't stand too close to Sting.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado, this is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to the show. Seated at the desk to my right is Laura Medicus.
Howdy.
Howdy. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this Inside Chat edition of the show. The show that we like to call The Inside Flap, a.k.a.
The Inside Flap.
Ah, yes. Well, it does sound a lot better when they, for my former student Zuzu in Thailand, sing it than it does when I say it.
True.
We got a great guest, a great show for you today, and a great guest. We're joined once again by Sunday Times and New York Times best-selling author Peter Swanson. He's got a great new book out that we really enjoyed. It's called Every Vow You Break, and we'll have that conversation for you in just a second. But first, Laura, you had a little guest to the house this past week.
I did.
Did you not?
We have...
Special guest!
We have a concrete pair of back stairs that go down to a horrible basement in our 1930s home.
When you say a pair of back stairs, it sounds there's not two sets of back stairs.
That's true.
They are, I guess it's a set of stairs.
It's a set of stairs.
That kind of goes around the corner with a little platform in between. A little landing. Okay, yeah.
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 And we have had those uncovered with carpet tack strips for 3 years.
Not 3 years. Let's say 3 months. I thought it was a job I could tackle.
Longer than 3 months. Since the summer.
I stripped down the old carpeting that was nasty, and I was like, all right, I got this. Laura, you ordered a lovely carpet to put down.
Cheetah print.
Exactly. A lovely cheetah print carpet. And I said, I can install this carpet. Lickety split. ABC 123. Watch me work. Ripped out the old stuff. Put down padding, put down the tacks, carefully cut out the little wood. I think I took 3 trips to the Home Depot to get the right kind of carpet tacks with the adhesive on the back, laid them down on all the risers. Then even picked up the carpet from the special warehouse up near my school, brought it back, and then I look at the steps.
You panicked.
And I look at this roll of carpet.
Yeah.
And I spent 2 hours watching videos on YouTube about how to install carpet on stairs. And I said, this is going to be a big no for me. Why don't you call somebody?
I don't blame
somebody.
You. It seemed hard to me. And I was like, I'll just have a guy do it. And you're like, no, I've got this.
I mean, I'm looking at, they got special kickers that you strap onto your knee to kick the carpet into the creases. Yes. They got a tool at the Home Depot. You strap this metal wedge-like thing onto your knee.
Huh.
And it's a kicker that you wedge in with your knee to wedge the carpet into the creases in between the stair treads.
Don't know that that happened on our carpet.
Why don't you tell us about the guy who came to install this carpet?
I finally got a guy, and I have I'm an interior designer, so I actually have a carpet guy that I use and I love,
right.
And he's great. However, he needs a knee replacement. And we have cement concrete stairs.
You got knee kickers.
So it's like, hey, Laura, I've got
this other guy, mm-hmm. Richard, I'm sending over. And I was like, no problem, no problem. I pictured a young guy. Right. So.
And meanwhile, we had been dodging these. So they're the tack strips.
Hitting them.
The carpet tack strips have been laid on these steps for
since
months.
Summer.
And yes, we've been steadfastly trying to dodge them mm-hmm. as we walk up and down the steps.
But every once
basement.
In a while, my foot would just hit dead on in one of the
right
tack
on the,
strips.
A sharp tack.
Yeah. Didn't feel good.
No, it's not a good feeling.
No.
It's kind of a sad trombone feeling is what it is.
So this guy, so Bill's like, well, he'll be there, you know, at 8:30. So it's fine. You know, I see a truck pulls up at 8 o'clock, which is great. He's on time.
Nice and early.
Raring
to go.
Didn't see him. Like, I was going to invite him in and say, hey, you can come on and get started. But then... he kind of like seemed like he disappeared. So at 8:30, I opened the door. I texted Bill. I was like, hey, you can let him know.
He ghosted you already?
Well, I didn't see him sitting in the truck.
Here's a guy who wasn't too anxious to get
and
to
so,
work.
So I didn't tell you this.
Was he scoping out the neighborhood? What was he doing? Casing the joint?
No, he had gone to sleep. So he had bundled himself up and he had laid down in his truck cab, which is fine. But then the guy is quite...
Catching a little catnap. He laid down in the back of his truck?
He's old enough that he's probably had both vaccines already,
okay.
Right?
Well, that's good.
And I know in the state of Colorado it's 50 plus, but he's probably had both vaccines for a while now, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. So that's how old he is. And then he comes in, I show him the stuff. He looks at it, show him where the carpet is. He looks at it. He says, okay. And so then he goes back out to his truck.
Right, and probably,
I'm
sitting go get his tools,
in
right?
my
he
office.
He went to get his tools. Okay.
I'm sitting in my office and I'm looking out thinking, what is this guy doing? And he is sitting in his truck taking a leisurely smoke break at 8:35 in the morning.
A little smoke break.
Because he had the nap and then he got up and saw the work he had to do. So he's fortifying himself with a cigarette.
Not one of these smoke breaks. Then.
No, definitely not.
Okay,
not this guy.
A cigarette smoke.
No.
Okay.
And so the thing about it was, I haven't had a day to myself. Like with the pandemic, it's mm-hmm. been hard, right?
Yeah.
We all crave a little, all of us introverts out there, maybe extroverts too. I doubt it though.
Yeah.
But us introverts, we crave a little bit of alone time. And I haven't gotten it. And especially because we had a big blizzard.
Right. So I was home.
There's been days off. Sylvia's been home. It's been, and I work from home. So.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to this was the one
Street.
Day where I didn't have to go to see any clients and I could just work from home. And I just wanted a day to like listen to Marc Maron mm-hmm. and do my thing and not have anyone else in the home. And so I know because of what I do, this should take a couple hours.
Right. Sure. It's a very short amount. It's like 9 steps.
Honestly,
is what it is.
If that.
Yeah.
If that.
And the tacks are already down and the padding's already down
a
for
lot
him.
Of the work had been done.
Oh, yeah, by this guy. Yeah.
So,
Dave Medicus.
A lot of the work had been done. This guy comes back in after his first cigarette break.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he does exactly. I think he lays his tools out and then.
Well, you gotta get the lay of the land.
Busy doing other work, et cetera. And then I see him go back out and sit in his truck. And go to another cigarette. And I had looked at the time because this is what I had done. And it had been 22 minutes between his first cigarette and his second cigarette.
22 minutes. That's like a 2-pack-a-day deal. 20 cigarettes.
And this went on, Dave, for 4 hours. And I'm out of my mind because at that point, my day to myself had gone because I had to pick up Sylvia from school.
Uh-huh.
And so the short window of time that I was enjoying... That would have just been me and the pets alone in the home. I could have talked to myself. I could have turned on an obnoxious podcast and listened to it while I did work.
Right.
All of that was gone.
That going on. None of that.
And he's not getting paid by the hour. It's by the job. So he could have, I mean, he could have, I don't, that is the other puzzling thing about it all. It was just odd. It was so odd. And then there was a trip to 7-Eleven involved. And 7-Eleven.
Well, he probably ran out of cigarettes.
That would be my guess. He caged it that he needed some coffee, but I don't think that he did.
I'm going to run out to the 7-Eleven.
And in my head, I was like, oh, I'll just offer him our coffee because I had coffee here. And then I thought, oh, I bet it's not really coffee.
Right. It's quote coffee. Quote, maybe, you know, there is a liquor store across the street from the 7-Eleven. Maybe he had a nip out to the, you know, it goes good with cigarettes, and that's liquor.
I didn't get that impression about him.
Mm, okay. All right. Just the cigarette.
Maybe.
Addict.
I didn't smell that.
All right. Did you smell the nicotine?
I smelled the nicotine. The cat smelled the nicotine too, because the cat was really interested in him.
Oh, the cat was getting his little nicotine high, was he?
Yeah. I think cats like the smell of cigarettes. That's a theory that I've always had.
Yeah.
And our cat, I had to actually pull our cat off of him because our cat was so into him. Because he was on the floor like cutting carpet or something, and I had to go get the cat away from him. Hmm. And he's like, oh.
Maybe it was a catnip cigarette he was
smoking.
He's
like, oh, animals can always tell when they're loved. And I'm thinking, or
they just,
this cat likes cigarettes. Yeah, so it was like frustrating because it's a job that I knew should have taken 2 hours at the most.
And how long did it end up taking?
It took about four. It took about 4 hours. And it was the slowest I've ever seen anyone in my entire life work, ever. And I just had no interest in finishing the job. It boggled my mind. It was to the point where I was like, I might have to leave him here while I go to pick up Sylvia.
Do you think he was just lonely? Was he chatting with you?
No.
Really?
No.
Did he have headphones on?
No. Nothing. Just smoking.
Just smoking away.
Yeah. It was very strange. He's very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. He remarked that our neighborhood, he liked our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I thought this was very specific. Oh. And our neighborhood reminded him of towns in Kansas where farmers would retire to. Those were his words, not mine. Yeah.
I don't know what
he's
that,
like. I said, really?
What does that mean?
I kind of, and he's like, yeah. He
Do
said,
farmers, they don't just live on the farmhouse?
No, he said, when they sell their farm, he said, they move into the town and they buy a house like this and they'll live in the town. And he said, this looks like one of those towns.
Oh, we need to walk door to door and find out who's the retired
And I just thought,
around.
That is very specific
and very strange.
And interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, and he was real contemplative about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, was talking He'd about...
been thinking about this.
He was thinking about it.
Well, when you sit in your truck
I just
and
realized
just smoke,
it's because he's looking around at the homes.
Yes.
Thinking about it.
He's got nothing else to look at. Smokers are deep thinkers.
He was ruminative. That is a word I would describe with him.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so that was that.
Good for you, sir.
I know.
Did you catch his name? Can we give him a shout out?
Sure, Richard.
All right. Richard the Smoker. Shout out to you, Richard the Smoker.
Yeah.
And you're welcome back.
Thinking some deep thoughts.
He did an okay job on the carpet. We'll see. So it seems like the carpet could be a little tighter onto the treads.
A little loose.
Little loose. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see.
We'll keep an eye on that.
Take the steps
listeners,
lightly.
Listeners, we'll give you an update. All right. Well,
oh,
today,
I did see how it was done, so I can help you the next time.
Okay, perfect. Okay. And no knee kicker? He didn't use a knee kicker? Because the guy on YouTube was using
a
knee kicker.
I don't think so, no.
How did he wedge it in? Well, anyway, let's get on. Let's get on with the show, for goodness sakes. We are joined by Peter Swanson, Sunday Times and New York Times bestselling author of 7 novels, including The Kind Worth Killing, which was the winner of the New England Society Book Award and finalist for the CWA Ian Fleming Steel Dagger. His new book. Oh, and you know, we talked to him last year with this book that we both really loved, 8 Perfect Murders, which was a good one. And it was great to talk to him again about his new book, Every Vow You Break. This is I had a great time with this book. It's a down and dirty psychological thriller I found to be kind of reminiscent of old school classics like an old IR 11 book. Hmm. This features a small cast of characters, a remote island off the coast of Maine, and the duplicitous, deceitful human nature that seems to pervade and reside in the hearts of a select few. I love this book. Ripped right through it one afternoon on the couch. And, you know, like I told Peter, it really was just a great way to inhabit this world in this book. You get in, you submerge yourself in it, and don't come up for air until it's over.
I think a lot of writers, if given the preference, they might like have a book where it could be perhaps a one sitting, one afternoon, one evening.
Especially a thriller. Yeah. You know, like these psychological thrillers, you want to just kind of...
Because they are readers themselves and they know what a gift that is when that happens. Because it's rare.
It is rare. And this book provides it. So the story revolves around a woman named Abigail. And it's the age-old story. You know this story. Stop me when this sounds unfamiliar to you.
Oh.
Okay?
Does she smoke a lot?
Girl, she's not a big smoker, and I don't think she installs carpeting.
Oh, darn it.
Girl meets millionaire guy. Girl falls in love with guy. Girl is seduced by a stranger on her bachelorette weekend. Girl sleeps with stranger, marries millionaire right afterwards,
ooh,
then goes to her honeymoon with millionaire guy. Hmm. And then, well, that's where I'm going to not tell you anymore because does it get juicy? And does it get delicious and twisty and turny?
Is there a prenup?
Surprises. You'll have to read the line. She's married a millionaire, for goodness sakes.
So hopefully he had a prenup installed there.
Yeah, hopefully so. I can highly recommend this book. This is a fast read with fun twist. I just devoured. The suspense mounts to a furious pace as the pages fly by. We're not really sure who's telling the truth and who's not. I just love this book. We had a great conversation with Peter. The book is Every Vow You Break. And here it is right now, our chat with Peter Swanson.
Every vow you break, every smile you fake, every claim you stake, I'll be watching you.
Yeah.
That is correct, yeah.
Not the same.
I know you can see we got dressed up for this, so you probably, I mean, that's why you probably thought it was video, but
yeah,
no. No. Just a audio podcast. But anyway, listen, Peter, thanks for, were you in Boston? You outside of Boston?
Yeah.
Very good. We're here in Colorado looking out at a ton of snow, which...
Yeah, you guys got a whopper.
Yeah.
Oh, we got a big one, 2 feet. Fourth biggest snowstorm in Denver history.
That's got to be a lot. So that's a lot of snow. And was it the kind that kind of drifted and made big things, or was it heavy?
It was a drifter, and it was an East Coast snow, because we're both from the East Coast, so it was wet, heavy, and we had ice and fog, which we never have.
Yeah, it was a strange one.
I'd like to send it back.
My sister-in-law lives in Denver, and she said the grocery stores were absolutely
crazy.
It was
ridiculous.
It's like an East Coast thing. I was like, what's going on?
Usually we don't react that way, but the hype around the storm was so great. I guess the news, they were so excited to talk about something other than the pandemic. We're going to talk about this storm, and we're going to send everybody into a fevered pitch. Because
we're going to rush out and get there.
Yeah.
No milk.
I had to buy a $7 gallon of milk. I'm ashamed to say.
They price gouged you.
Uh-huh. Well, it was the only one left on the shelf because we live in a cheap neighborhood. So.
Well, anyway, Peter, thanks for hopping on. Listen, your new book, dear God, this book, Every Vow You Break. This is a story of stalkers, strangers, sex, and psychological warfare. Peter, what inspired you to write this book?
It's weird. I think the inspiration for this one was a little more along the type of book I wanted to write, mm-hmm. as opposed to...
There's your cat. Sorry, I'm easily distracted.
I know. You know, I say you can't, you know, as soon as you put a cat in something, like, you stop looking at the person.
I immediately looked over your shoulder.
Just jumped up behind. So honestly, I've written a bunch of thrillers, and most of them are what I would consider like fairly complex thrillers in the sense that they have. They often have multiple narrative perspectives. Mm-hmm. Sometimes two or three people telling a story from different angles. Sometimes they have different time periods, like the past. We learn about the past and it's affecting the present and all this sort of thing. I mean, you know what thrillers like this are like. I mean, it's most thrillers these days are this type of thriller. Mm-hmm. I wanted to write a thriller that was just straight ahead linear thriller. In other words, someone makes a mistake. In this case, Abigail Baskin, and she has a fling on her bachelorette weekend. She has a one-night stand with a stranger, decides to go forward with a wedding, and this guy shows up to stalk her. And I just wanted to do a thing where we just learn as we go through the story. We learn everything that at the exact same moment as Abigail does. Mm-hmm. And it just propels. It goes from one event to the other, and she's in a bind. So it doesn't flashback. It doesn't have those other things. So I just wanted to set myself that challenge to write that type of book. I also suspected I wrote this book, I think, in 2 months when the first draft.
Wow.
And I told myself, this book will be easier to write in a way, structurally mm-hmm. easier. And which, of course, was totally wrong. I mean, I ended up going back over this book about 100 times to get the structure right.
Right.
Because, you know, no books are easy. So that was my inspiration, was more the type of story I wanted to tell.
I love that. Yeah. And so you didn't outline any of this then. Did you just do you just plunge in when you start writing something like this?
I almost always just plunge in. I never outline it, at least not in writing. Mm-hmm. I'm not totally blind as to what might happen. I had the basic, you know, the sort of major turn in the middle of this book. I kind of knew that was coming. I had basic ideas about how the story might end. But in general, I just start with a premise and I go from there. And there have been books in the past where I really start with a premise without knowing too much about where it goes.
Wow.
So I do a little outlining in my head, but definitely not on paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You prefer to work that way, I'm guessing, since that's the way you do work?
I do.
It's a little scary.
I mean, it's double-edged because, yeah. You know, on the good side, I think it can keep the story fresh because you're not trying to hit these beats. Right. And they're kind of coming along unexpected. And sometimes you wind up with something really good that you never would have thought of in an outline. On the flip side, you know, and it's happened to me. I've gotten halfway through a book and it's done. I mean, I'm cooked. It's like, you know, you're painted in a corner. You can't get out of it. And that happens every book. Every book you're going to paint yourself into a corner. So it's how you get out of that corner that makes or breaks the book. So, at least that's how I see it. And if you come, you know, so there's always a moment of kind of real horror when you're just making it up as you go along that you're, you know, that you just wasted a bunch of time. And sometimes you have. I mean,
that's sometimes you have, yeah. That give you anxiety, you know, you just lie awake at night sleeping about it. Like how long, when you paint yourself in a corner, how long do you give it before you either give up or you make that breakthrough?
You know, you can work on it for some time if you're sort of halfway into a book. Sometimes if you're early on and it's not going to happen. But it's interesting you mentioned being up at night. I mean, I do think there's a little trick that I do sometimes that I've heard other writers talk about, which is, you know, if you're at a problematic point in your book, do a little reading in your book before you go to sleep and kind of lay there and think about it. Mm. And if you're able to fall asleep, sometimes you wake up. It's not like an aha moment, but your subconscious has kind of unpicked some of those strands. That can happen to me. I think sometimes if you're just constantly thinking about something, something will just come to you.
Right.
And that can happen subconsciously, unconsciously, I guess would be correct.
Absolutely.
Which is great when it happens.
Yeah, I think we've talked to you before about, I think you like to walk around Walden Pond, I remember.
I do. I talked about that.
That's helpful, too.
That's got to help.
My previous book, Eight Perfect Murders.
Yes, love that book,
And that was the one book that I had the plot for, that just came to me kind of whole,
right?
A whole plot, and that was unusual.
Hmm. Cool.
Well, I like this one. It had a kind of a, like, almost like, a, felt like a kind of a throwback book to me, kind of old school. And you mentioned Ira Levin in the book. I got like an Ira Levin feel to it. And you can't go wrong when you bring up Ira Levin, you know?
I was thinking a lot about Ira Levin. It's kind of the style he writes, not always, but certainly for Rosemary's Baby, certainly for Stepford Wives, where it's just, you know, again, you get one perspective. And just weird shit starts happening. And you learn and you get sort of propelled into this story. And I also thought about IR 11. This is one of my pet little peeves or whatever about the industry that I'm in and that I'm happy to be part of. Is IR 11 wrote 50,000, 60,000 word thrillers. Right. That's the length of them. These days, and in fact, lots of mystery and crime writers used to write books. I mean, and then there were none, which is the Agatha Christie book where she kills 10 characters. She writes up, I think it's 55,000 words. Yeah. Nowadays, you really can't turn in a 50,000, 60,000 word book. Mm. They expect about 80,000, 90,000 words for a mystery. I think it's sometimes too long.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are great mystery novels that are 150,000 words because the story is a 150,000 word story. But I think those shorter novels can be really great for thrillers, and they can allow you to do these kind of, simpler ideas. They don't have to be as complex, which can be great. So I had thought about that as well when thinking about this book. I wanted to write a shorter book, and this is definitely on the short end. But it's not short like, you know, they used to be, these 50,000, 60,000 word books.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish we were allowed to still do those. I mean, I guess I could try and get away with it, but I think, you know, my agent's always like, you know, that's too short.
That's interesting that you say that, because a lot of books, you know, I'll be complaining to Dave. I'm like, well, it was great up until then. And and it just feels like, you know, there's a twist that's tacked on, too many twists, like
there's just twist and twist and extraneous stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that it was probably because of the publishing industry is encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also become a norm. I mean, you know, I exactly know what you're talking about, the like one twist too many, which I think you're seeing in a ton of
a lot of books right now.
Books these days, and you're seeing it in sort of the thriller series. Twists are great, and in some ways they're kind of my bread and butter. Mm-hmm. But there are thrillers that don't need twists. Some thrillers are just someone's in a bad place and they got to get out of it.
Yeah.
And we know what the bad place is at the beginning. I mean, Jaws doesn't have a twist. It just has a shark that's killing people and they have to stop it. There's no, you know, it doesn't turn out at the end that the mayor was the shark all along. Thank God.
Like Scooby-Doo, yank off the hood.
Yeah. Because now it's everything's twist, twist, twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm talking like this, like all my books are twist. I mean,
But it's, your books are different in that you do have the twist for sure, but there's some other books that I'm reading now and it's just one right after the other. And
there's
it's like,
no purpose to them. Like you got to have a purpose to them and a meaning.
Yeah. There, sometimes it becomes no purpose. Yeah.
But I like what you're saying about the shorter books. Cause with a book like this and what I did and what I like to do with the books like this, you want to get yourself on the couch, you know, get a beverage, lay down on it. You open up that book, you get yourself into this world. You don't want to be taken out of that world. You know, you want to live in this world, breathe in this world, spend 2-3 hours. And then when you wrap it up, it's like, holy shit, what an experience I just had. But, and that's what I like. And that's what I did with this book. But, it's the extraneous side trips or the extra characters or the extra stuff that gets thrown in too often that kind of takes you out of that. And, you know,
subplots. I mean, there's, you know, if you're writing an 80,000 word thriller, chances are you need a subplot of some kind.
Yeah.
Cause other, and again, I think we're all saying all this. I think we're in agreement that this often hobbles what could be good books.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're also be in agreement that we've probably all read long, complex thrillers that are brilliant.
Right.
I mean, there's no rule.
That's true.
To it. It's just that when it becomes a one size fits all, that's where you sort of run into trouble. So I think, I've read books where, you're thrown in subplots, you're thrown in extraneous characters, you're throwing, you know, you have to do all this sort of thing. And, you know, I do think that's the function of word count. Word count is just not something, I mean, you never think about it as a reader if you're not a writer. And then as soon as you're a writer, you're like, geez, what's my word count? Do I have a novel here or am I writing a novella? Because if you're writing a novella, you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Because no one wants to buy a novella.
No.
No, unless you're Stephen King, you know, you're in big trouble.
Unless you're Stephen, right. I mean, Stephen King's so lucky because, that's my dream. I love his books that include the four novellas.
They're great. They're great.
Four of them now.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Novella is a great length for him, actually.
Yeah.
It really is. Yeah.
Because he can tend to go on. And, and you know, I love Stephen King, but sometimes when he's forced into that novella length, The Full Dark, No Stars, which was recent, was really good. Yeah. His last one was good, too. And then, of course, he wrote the classics, the Different Seasons.
Different Seasons.
Yeah.
Four After Midnight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's Four a great length for him.
Yeah.
There should be more novellas, and there should be more mystery thriller novellas.
Yeah.
Because it's a, again, it's a great length, and you can kind of, you know, you can sit down in one, you know, a winter evening.
Yes.
After dinner, sit down, start a story.
There you go.
Finish it at midnight.
Yeah. Ooh, man, wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
So you talk about your main character, Abigail. She has this tryst right before her wedding, that, and she meets this stranger. Now, the stranger, of course, is a guy who's quoting poetry to her and kind of wooing her. Now, Peter, as a writer, does that come with the territory? Do you find yourself, at when we used to be able to go to parties, do you find yourself having to quote poetry or literature at will?
I don't want to be associated with that guy. Please don't tie me in with him. I think and this is speaking of someone who loves poetry and wrote poetry and still reads quite a bit of poetry. Run away from the guy who quotes poetry at you.
At the party. Okay, good.
He has ulterior motives.
That's good. That's really good.
I think anyone who quotes poetry always has ulterior motives. Oh
yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Not to keep comparing you to this guy, but are you a Poe aficionado?
Well,
yeah.
Am I a Poe aficionado? Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm an aficionado, but I love his writing and am interested in him. You know, and it's funny, I'm from Boston, and Boston just put up a statue, a really cool statue of Edgar Allan Poe. He's sort of walking as though the wind is whipping his coat back, and he's got a briefcase, and it's flown open, and there's like a bird flying out of it, and all these things flying out of it from his imagination. It's very cool.
Hmm.
And Boston's trying to reclaim Edgar Allan Poe.
Want
to take him back from Baltimore.
Sure.
Well, yeah.
Because he lived in Boston, but then I think he died in Baltimore. So Boston's trying to, which is kind of maybe a mean move on Boston's part. Like, let Baltimore have.
Baltimore needs Poe.
We need him. I'm from Baltimore, and we need, we already have a football team named the Ravens. It's too late, Boston, you know.
You do have the coolest named. You have a football team named after a poem.
Yes. How crazy is that?
The Raven. Yeah, so Boston's making a bid.
Boston has so much.
Come on, Boston.
I'm seeing some angry faces here.
Yeah. Step back, Boston. Yeah. Step back.
Boston has so much.
But
you know,
New York. New York would get mad about Baltimore claiming Poe because, you know, Poe lived most of his life in New York and then just came down to Baltimore to die. And then all of a sudden, it's like, Baltimore's own Edgar Allan Poe. We got the Poe House. In fact,
have the Poe House.
There was a every year on the anniversary.
You didn't know what you were opening here, did you?
I don't know.
Are you both from Baltimore?
I went to high school, in Maryland. Ah, yeah.
Okay.
But,
I did not know.
Sorry, now you know.
We got The Wire and we got Edgar Allan Poe. Okay, so we got those two.
We have David Simon.
Yeah.
We have David Simon.
And Laura Lippman.
Yeah, that's true. That's
that
true.
Is true. Yes, yes. Yeah, that's true.
But no, every year on his birthday or his death day, a mysterious stranger would come and leave a rose on his grave.
Yeah.
That story sounded a lot better in my mind. I don't know.
The Baltimore.
I think there might be more to it. But like the news media would be there and they'd like try to capture and everybody's wondering, who is this mysterious stranger? It's probably the local weatherman or something. I don't know. But getting back to your book, now there was one line in your book here that really made me laugh out loud. So you got Abigail was complaining about her former boyfriend who was a poet, and she said this guy was just exhausting because he was, quote, constantly asking me to read things he'd written or sharing things he'd read. Do you think that's a common complaint for spouses or partners of poets and writers?
It's funny. I think, I mean, it's a certain type of young person that I probably was more like that in my 20s when I was writing more short stories and poems and stuff like that. I think my wife reads my novels, but she reads them in a pretty, I don't hand her like what I wrote that night.
Look at this.
That would be really annoying.
Would not be good. Yeah.
I hand her a finished book.
Nice.
And I get her opinion. She's actually one of the opinions I quite like. She's not a mystery reader and she's not necessarily in love with it. And she's really good at sort of reading me for you know, this part's annoying or like, you know, she's not coming at it from a literary bent.
Right.
She comes at very much as a reader. So, and she doesn't go easy on me at all. You'd think she would because we're married, but that isn't. Or you think she wouldn't. I don't know.
No, but, yeah, either could go either way.
She does not go easy on me. It is exhausting to be in. It would be exhausting to be in a relationship where both people are writers and are constantly showing each other their stuff, because then you're in a sort of a feedback loop.
Yeah,
of,
that's true.
Yeah.
Poems. This is turning into the sort of anti poem.
I'll switch it up.
Let's switch it up. I can't. Yeah. We can't. There's not a whole lot. I don't want to get into.
You have a great title.
Yeah.
Are you sick of the song "Every Breath You Take" by The Police yet? Or has that always been the title? Head.
I mean, I have heard that the major complaint of this book is that, you know, well, the major complaint was my neighbor read it and her husband complained that he would lay there in bed and look over and see the book, and then suddenly the song would be in his head and he couldn't get it out.
Yeah,
It's funny. It was a title that took a long time. We couldn't come up with a title, and so I started thinking about song lyrics, and then I was thinking about there's a element of the book is stalking, and I thought, oh, what's the greatest, the creepiest stalking, the creepiest mainstream radio hit that was all about stalking ever, which was "Every Breath You Take," and then got the line from that, Yeah, that song is now sort of in my head permanently.
Yeah.
Which it kind of was before. It's a catchy song.
It's always been there,
It can kind of get stuck in there.
It can. And it was a massive hit. And it was funny because I remember being a kid when it came out and just thinking it was a great song and not really thinking about the lyrics. And then it was one of those where when you really sit down and then think about the lyrics, it's like, holy shit, this is not a good song.
I had the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's certainly not a romantic song.
No. All right.
No.
I suspect some people think it might be.
Heck no.
Now, you reference in your acknowledgments a Margaret Atwood quote, but you say you didn't use it, but you referenced it three times in the acknowledgments. What was the quote and why didn't you use it?
All right. So the quote is, men are afraid that women will laugh at them. Oh. Women are afraid that men will kill them.
Okay.
Okay.
That right. I just got a shiver. Shiver.
An incredible quote.
Yeah.
Here's kind of the reason I didn't use it. She didn't say it exactly like that. In fact, if you go online, you'll see that she's attributed with that quote. But she said it she said it on stage in response to a question. She was telling a story about she had asked people in our creative writing class, young people, young men and women, what are men afraid of? What are women afraid of? And she said the common answers came up that men were afraid of being laughed at and women were afraid of being killed by men.
Okay.
So, but she said it kind of like this in a long rambling thing. Mm-hmm. And then someone distilled it and created this quote.
Okay.
So she didn't actually say those words in that order, but she certainly expressed that idea. So I just, it got complicated because I was like, I can't, if I quote her on that, I'm not actually, and then I pulled the whole paragraph and I was like, could I quote her on that? And then I thought I'd just make it a mystery and put it in the acknowledgments so that people you guys could be like,
mucks like us to be like, that. Wait,
but it is actually something I thought of. So I thought obviously about, the women are afraid men will kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And we're having this podcast interview on a kind of a dark day.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
After what happened in Atlanta last night, terrifying situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in England recently too.
And men, but I also thought about the men part too. This fear of men have of being taken for fools, of being humiliated by a woman, and how this drives them to violence. And so it's just such a great, it's such a chilling quote. And it did inform a lot of the gender stuff I thought about when I dug into this book, especially in the second half of it.
Yeah. All right, Peter, it's time now for our segment.
No way to segue out
we
of that.
Well, we're just playing some music. We'll put some Police, Don't Stand Too Close to Me. Here we go. Yeah, time
another,
now.
Another weird song.
another weird about a teacher's relationship with a teenager.
Yeah.
Dang, what's up with him?
I don't know. What are you doing, Gordon? Come on, guy.
He looks innocent.
He does. Mm-hmm. That's the ones you always got to look out for, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I bet he's a poetry quoter.
Sting,
no, he's a poetry
Sting is a poetry quoter, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know that him and Trudy Styler, his wife, quote poetry back and forth.
No, they do.
Oh, yeah, with a bunch of candles around.
Yeah. No.
Candles, their Kama Sutra book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep, and he'll sidle up to you at a party and just start spouting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Run away from Sting.
The worst. Run. Don't stand too close to Sting. All right, Peter, time now for our segment we call Quick Six quick questions, which we find out a little bit more about you. Here we go. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
I just watched Unforgotten, which is a BBC, a British mystery series starring Nicola Walker and Sanjeev Bhaskar. It's about cold cases. It's on Amazon Prime. Mm. All the seasons are good, but season two is one of the best.
Ooh, good tip.
That's a good one. I like that.
What fictional world or place would you like to visit?
Fictional world or place. I don't know. There's something about... I've been watching some Agatha Christie Poirot stuff. There's something about those those country house weekend murder mysteries.
Yeah.
And of course, people get dropped like flies, but they're also kind of comforting.
Yes.
And you're drinking sherry and all that. I wouldn't mind going to one of those places.
Oh, that sounds so great, doesn't it? Yeah.
It is funny how they're called cozies and they seem cozy, but it's really about murder and death. And
right, yeah.
I love a cozy.
Who doesn't love a good cozy? Peter, how about this one? What is a top five favorite movie of yours?
I'm just trying to figure out which one to say. The Hitchcock film I love, that's always in my top five and maybe my number one that most people don't mention, is The Lady Vanishes, which is a 1938 English production about a young woman on a train who meets an older woman, and then the older woman disappears and everyone says she was never there. It's a great, clever crime thriller. That's sort of funny and romantic. It's got sort of three parts to it, and I love it. Huh. So, and it's my comfort place. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. You put The Lady Vanishes on, and I'm just a happy, happy camper.
sounds good.
Sounds really good. What is a top five favorite book?
Top five favorite book. I'll say. Rebecca is right up there, the Daphne du Maurier book. I read that quite young, and I've returned to it a couple times. But, great gothic fiction, great unreliable narrator, and just a great thriller.
Yeah, it really is.
How about this, Peter? Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
My go-to karaoke song is running in the opposite direction from the karaoke. I can't carry a tune.
You don't have to carry a tune to do. How about singing in the shower?
Oh, I don't sing in the shower.
It's silent in there.
Are you kidding me? I wouldn't do that to myself.
All right, we'll go with Every Breath You Take then.
Yes, Every Breath You Take. I'll do the sort of William Shatner version. I'll speak it.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every Breath You Take.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm reading Linwood Barclay's new book.
Yes.
What's it called? I'm looking over. Find You First. Because I'm actually, and I've read a few of his recently. He's very good. I'm interviewing him for his book launch,
cool.
I've never done that before. So I'm going to be his questioner online, virtual, of course. So I'm reading his new one, which is great.
Awesome. We're going to be talking to him too. I got the book in the kitchen. I love that. Love that guy. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, he's great. He's and that, and his books are kind of different. They're not formulaic. They go.
Yeah.
He does different types of stuff, which I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As do you, Peter Swanson. Loved your book, Every Vow You Break. This is one you want to dive in and just don't leave those waters until it's time to get out of the pool. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, guys. Fun as always.
Thank you.
So much,
bye.
Indeed. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right, there you go. That was Peter Swanson. His book is Every Vow You Break. Check it out. It is a good one, and we thank him for coming on. My name is Dave Medicus. That was our Inside Chat for today. Check us out tomorrow, another brand new episode for you. A special guest, Amakatsu.
Yes. Adios.
Step back, Boston. Yeah. Step back.